no longer contagious. Give me a big hug there, Snopes. I missed you. Okay. First of all, a formal gush, howdy-dowdy welcome to Meir. Meir, if you haven't met Meir, everyone say hello to Meir. Happy to have you on board. Okay, we'll give you the hazing rules a little bit later, but we'll give him a couple of days of getting used to things. Second of all, we're starting Daf Tes, Mirtz Hashem, today. And Daf Tes has some very, very interesting sugyos. We're only going to learn about a blot, and then we're going to skip to Daf Tes Vav, because the intervening Dapim talk about collection policies, which are very interesting, but not Bava Kama related. But we're going to learn Tesamid Beis, learn Yudamid Beis, a little bit Yud Aleph and Mid Aleph. And we'll see a few cases of people who were involved in unique forms or scenarios of damage, partially watching, partially not watching. So, for example, you delivered your animal to someone who can't fully watch, is not fully capacitated to watch a chereshok b'katan, one of you chayev, one of you pater, joint damages, 10 people sit on a bench, 2 people dig a bore. So we'll think about these larger questions and how they impact our view of Bava Kama. Partial performance of a damage, joint performance of a damage, you watch, but someone else ruined all the measures you took, but that person isn't necessarily dependable, so he can't be blamed. But we'll also try to diversify these questions through various different of us. Well, maybe Bor is different from Aish, and maybe Shor is different from Bor, and maybe... So we're not going to ask just global questions about Bava Kama with joint participation, or Bava Kama with watching but then delivering to someone who will undo your measures, but how do these filter through the different mazikim, and can we really try to define these mazikim by some of these test cases? So just going to get a little bit of traction, and then we're going to jump to test Bava and Aleph, and we'll spend a week on Karen, and 2 weeks on Shane, and 3 weeks on Sraros, and we're just going to really dive into these small little pools on the side without asking general Bava Kama questions. So this is a little bit of a taster before we get involved in very, very specific mazikim. This is a taster of global issues, but streamed through specific mazikim in their unique dynamics and unique phenomena. So it's very interesting. We'll spend about a week and a half on that, then we'll jump to that as well. So I have Makaris here for you today. The schedule of this week is more or less, we'll have Shira tomorrow morning. The Makaris are not that hard. I assume people still be tired from the teal. People come in a little bit late, so they're relatively easy Makaris. And then tomorrow you'll have the Makaris for the Shira Peticha, which will be on Friday, given by one of the Rosh Hashivas. So that gets you back into the deep end of the pool. Okay, gets you back into the struggle to understand what they're saying. So this is a nice way to start the week. We'll have a Kiddush at my house on Shabbos. There's a Tish Chasanim on Shabbos, so there's a very nice Shabbos atmosphere here. The next week in Mirtz Hashem, we'll kick things off again in full throttle. Okay, so the Makaris are here. And what I want to do is, in Mirtz Hashem, starting next week, the 5 or 6 or 7 minutes before Shir, I want to take a month to try to help you and myself, because it's always a struggle. Arba Devarim Tzrichim Chizuk, the Gemara says in Brachos, 4 things you have to constantly work out, and one of them is Tefillah. But being that these are the Parshios of Tefillah, Vayera, Lech Lecha, Toldos, Vayetze, Chayisara, so just to speak 5 minutes before Shir, on tips and hints and ways to really revamp tefillah. But it's obviously it's a lifelong struggle. And to be honest, don't feel bad if you're not so great at davening with kavanah. Quite frankly, Baruch Hashem, most of you have little to daven for. You're not really davening out of desperation and out of need. Thank God your needs are provided. Thank God you're healthy. Thank God you become an adult and you realize the vulnerability of life and the challenges of your world. And you start to acquire and accumulate frustrations in your life. So there's a lot more to daven. So I think so much of davening is just getting there on time and honoring the experience and tucking yourself in and just coming more kavana, less kavana at this age, to me is not so crucial. Okay, so but this week, being that it's Parshas Noach, I just want to set the stage for the experiences of the next 5 months. Okay, Parshas Noach is very, very universal. Dor of Mabul, Dor of Migdal Bavel, we talk about this extensively tonight, what were their respective failures. Very little Jewish about Parshas Noach, and to a degree it reflects a stage of history where there's more of a universalist plan to expose humanity at large to HaKadosh Baruch Hu en masse. And when those plans and opportunities continue to collapse successively, HaKadosh Baruch Hu switched, whatever that means for the Bnei Adam to switch the strategy, but the strategy became selecting one person to form a tribe, to form a nation, to lead humanity by example, and to worship Hashem with greater regimentation to demonstrate the value of religious life. But somehow, Chazal sensed, especially in Migdal Bavel, scattering nations, and I talked about the Pasuk In Hazinu today, B'hanchel Elyon Goyim, B'hafrida B'nei Adam, Yatsiv G'vilos Amim L'mispar B'nei Yisrael, the seeds of Jewish identity starting to be sown. Hashem is preventing this conglomeration of one people and one nation, that universalist dream. One people, Safa Echos Edvar Machadim, that universalist dream, for whatever reason, I can't say fails, is inhibited, and now they're scattered, 70 different nations, and now one nation will be chosen. And that's the launching point for the Medrash to talk about Gemara. One of the most beautiful Midrashim in all of the body of Medrash about Torah Shebaal Peh is found in Parshas Noach. Ma'inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai. Why all of a sudden in Parshas Noach does the Medrash talk about Talmud Torah and Torah Shebaal Peh? Because of this subtlety. Because now, even though Avram is only chosen beginning of Lech Lecha, the Jewish history really begins in Lech Lecha, you can feel it in the end of Noach. Of course, in the end of Noach, not just through Migdal Bavel, but the end of Noach, we see Terach beginning his journey with Avram. So somehow this whole process is launching in the end of Noach. So I want to take a couple of moments today, very brief, and Mitzvah tomorrow, the next day, just to share with you some of Chazal's statements about Torah in general, and in particular about Torah Shebaal Peh, because that's what we're going to be investing in massively over the next 5 months. This is probably your greatest opportunity to decode Torah Shebaal Peh, as you've started to realize, to engage in Torah Shebaal Peh, as you've also begun to realize, it's not that easy. Chazal were aware of it. So let's read some of the comments of the Medrash Tanchuma. Hashem gave Torah to Am Yisrael. I'm just paraphrasing. V'lo od. Ela shetar shebechsav klalos. V'tarah shebaal peh pratos. Torah shebechsav are general guidelines, general rules. In general, you read Parshas Mishpatim, you get a general sense of accountability, responsibility, reparation, moral obligations. But what is Hashem's will in a specific level? I'm not just interested in generalities, what's God's will. What makes Judaism so powerful through Torah Shebaal Peh is that it enervates every single detail of human experience, and it comments in very logically coherent and networked fashion. So it's not just Hashem gives us his general inclination that if my ox damages your ox or my property, I should compensate you. That's how Torah Shebechsav describes it. And at our scene, Hashem delivered Torah Shebaal Peh and started to differentiate between items that are mobile, darchan lelechul halich, items that aren't mobile, bor, items that are tchilas asiyas lenezek, damages spurred by lust or pleasure, shame, damages which are routine, regel. And as you started to see, as we bore into these issues, we're starting to clarify the Rabbanu Shalom's will in very, very detailed, scientific, logical fashion. We're not just sufficing with Hashem's general interest. I remember, this struck me a long time ago. A very interesting part of my life. I worked for IBM, and we actually created an intranet about 7 or 8 years before the internet. We looped together about 80,000 IBMers. We created an internal system that they could communicate with one another. Very simple little texts and calendars. So it was really cool. Excuse me. And we had a staff of about 10, 15 people that worked on this project. And one of the members of the staff was a guy named Larry Williams. I doubt he's listening to this year. He's a really nice guy. He was the assistant priest in his church. Young guy. And generally the staff wasn't exactly Amech Kulam Tzadikim. You know, they hit the liquor hard and they weren't acting in ways that I was comfortable as Yeshiva Bachar. But Larry was very, very morally upright. So Larry and I got close. Larry was the Noach of that staff. Larry and I got close to one another. And at a certain point, Larry realized that I could be very valuable helping him prepare his Sunday sermons. So I'd sit with Larry. Every Thursday, we'd put together his sermon for the following Sunday. So remember, the first time I sat with him, I said, Larry, what do you want to talk about this Sunday? He said, do unto others as you're doing to yourself, after the Recha Kamocha. I said, well, what aspect of that concept do you want to discuss? And all his innocence, he looked at me dumbfounded. What do you mean, Michael? I want to discuss that. I said, but one angle? Like, switching the whole process. If you had asked me to give a shiur of after the Recha Kamocha, I'd say, who's chayiv? When are you chayiv? What are the limits? What are the applicable? I'd go through it and process it like any sugya. And I'd see what Rishonim say and see what the pasuk is, and I'd highlight different angles and better understand it rather than leaving it as some generalized aphorism, general adage. General adages don't always compel you to behavior and to understanding the same way that specific details and cellular analysis is. And without Torah Shebaal Peh, all you had was an adage. All you had was a very, very loosely organized value rather than applying it and parsing it into very, very detailed application. And it just struck me, the value of Torah Sheh Bal Peh. So Torah Sheh Bal Peh is the interpretation, the elaboration. Without Torah Sheh Bal Peh, these just remain very, very loose and very very vague, very non-compelling. Yeah, I'm a good person, I compensate, but how do I know Hashem's will? How do I want to apply it? I'm just choosing Baba Kama because that's the most relevant. It's every single detail that are alluded to by a pasuk here or a line here or halacha Moshe Misina. The entire world of Tzraros isn't even mentioned in the Torah. So halacha Moshe Misina. How do we detail the force of application of an animal? The animal doesn't damage with its body. It damages through force and velocity. How does Hashem see that? Why is it partial damage? We'll try to analyze. We'll try to deconstruct it. And the Medrash continues, quoting Psukim from Eov about the sweep and the vastness of Torah Sheh Bal Peh, the Yam Shel Torah, and you've sensed that vastness already. But the consequence is, a pasuk in Eov, Perek Chav Ches, Lo Tinsav Eretz Achayim. Chazal adapt this pasuk, Lo Tinsav Eretz Achayim. What do you mean? You can't find Torah in the land of the living? You have to be dead to learn? So Chazal, a very harsh statement. V'chiv Eretz HaMesim Tinsav, are you going to find Torah in the land of the dying? Ela shelotimsa Torah Sheh Bal Peh. You won't find someone succeeding in Torah Sheh Bal Peh, and I'll interpret it and paraphrase, if you learn it casually. If you learn Torah Sheh Bal Peh casually, you won't succeed. You have to die for it. And don't take this literally. You don't die for anything. You shouldn't push yourself to unhealthy limits. But I'll read you the language. Lo timsa Torah Sheh Bal Peh etzal misha bikesh onik ha'olam tava kavod gedula misha meimis atzmola. You have to be willing to go to the mat. Zos Torah Adam Kiyamas Baal. You realize you're not going to succeed in Torah Sheh Bal Peh with casual, tempered, relaxed effort. You have to really push yourself and push your limits. And it quotes the Mishnah, Pirkei Avos, Pasra Melech Tochel, Mayim Bamasura Tishta. Okay, you'll never have that in your life. Baruch Hashem, we live in a period, in an era, which none of you are going to be sleeping on the ground and eating bread and salt. And quite frankly, not even in Yeshiva. Baruch Hashem. Yeshiva world today has morphed to the point, your great-great-grandparents actually experienced that. To learn in a yeshiva, anytime before the 19th, the 20th century, it meant you were responsible for your own amenities. You came to Volozhin, it was a base medrash, and maybe a rickety shtender that was available to you. Were you going to sleep? Were you going to eat? It's your responsibility to find a lady in town, an almana, a married family, who have a bed for you, and bean soup twice a day with stale bread. And they literally dedicated their lives to Torah Sheh Bal Peh, even at great, great physical toil and physical exertion. Baruch Hashem, we live in a different period. The first yeshiva with a dormitory, anyone know? Historically? The Beis Chiddush was in Poland, in Lublin. The yeshiva's Chachmei Lublin, with Meir Shapira. One of the innovations, well, we're actually going to have a dormitory. And we'll feed the Bachar. We'll actually provide food. It was a real revolution. And thank God the revolution has been accompanied by greater wealth in the Jewish community that allows us to afford yeshivos, provisions, and thank God there's no reason to return to an earlier stage. But it's reflective of a certain view that Chazal had specifically about Torah Sheh Bal Peh. Skipping a little, I'll go back to it later. The Medrash asks the following famous question. Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu hoist the mountain if the Jews had already enthusiastically agreed Na'aseh V'Nishma? Famous Kasha. Tosfos already asked the Kasha. Ramital spoke about it extensively. Why is there a need for coercion if there's volition? Many different answers to that question. The most important answer is religion is a hybrid of each. That's obviously the most existentially important answer. But in the Medrash's world, there was an offset between two different parts of Torah. Listen carefully. It doesn't get better than this. Torah Shebuchsav, Na'aseh V'Nishma. Torah Sheh Bal Peh, wait a minute, that's very hard. Hashem has to force that. Hashem has to coerce that. Whether it's the difficulty of analysis or the difficulty of application, Torah Sheh Bal Peh is easy to apply. You're a good person, you don't steal, you don't cheat, you don't murder. Torah Sheh Bal Peh begins to address every detail of the human condition. So it's not just difficult to study, it's difficult to adhere to conform to. That they were far less enthusiastic about, and Hashem had to coerce it. Of course, there's all the theological questions, how could Hashem coerce us, but that's my challenge to you. Our Jewish world is full of intelligent people, understanding and appreciating religion, reading books about religion. Thank God, as you've sensed in yeshiva, the revolution of Tanakh learning. A few weeks before you guys came, there were 10,000, this year 8,000 last year, 10,000 people who came through these doors to learn Tanakh. How many people do you think would come if we sponsored a Yemei Yon and Gemara? Not too many. Let's face it, because it's difficult. Because it's harsh on many, many levels. Do you flee from that? Or do you embrace and say, well, someone's got to do it? We've got to have people in our community, in our world, who, as they say in the yeshiva world, are holding in Darshul, mastered it, have a command, an understanding, an appreciation, the inner logic, can share it, can infuse it, can breathe it into people. And who else is going to accomplish that? Not the people in this room. And it's why you're here. This is the bastion of Brisker Columbus. You're learning Torah from Rav Lichtenstein, from Rav Soloveitchik, from Rav Chaim. I mean, this is one of the modern manifestations of that Masorah. Rav Lichtenstein used to say that he loves learning Torah Shebaal Peh because Shas is so chaotic and random. And he feels as if he has to organize it and rescue it from its own chaos. Like he's a knight in shining armor, chivalry, rescuing the damsel in distress. There's a certain romantic beauty in Rebaran's statement that he's willing to submit to a very, very difficult regimen because it's important for our people, it's important for Am Yisrael. Especially in our community. One of the most acute challenges to our community, because we're undergoing so much change and because there are so many challenges and we have to adapt and find ways to maintain the Masara. So we need people who appreciate the world of Chazal, can convey the centrality of that world while still understanding the advances of the modern world. Much of our world is polarized vis-a-vis Chazal. The Haredi world is all in with Chazal. Chazal are the sole voice of authority. Everything about their world is superior to this world. Their medicine, their view of geometry. That world is the moral authority, the authority and the source of truth. And there are many people who feel that the modern world has advanced beyond the world of antiquity. So since the modern world is so much more advanced politically, economically, educationally, culturally, then of course it must be advanced morally in the world of Chazal. These are all outdated and outworn fossils of Jewish culture. Study their ideas and study their will because they're part of our culture, but they're no longer moral authorities. How can we create that very powerful middle where you're modern people and you understand the embrace and the challenges and the opportunities and the accomplishments of modernity in every single field, but still look back to Chazal as purveyors of, they're so close to that transmission point in Har Sinai, closer than we were, and they knew Torah in such a saturated fashion. And That's your opportunity. So the next time you wake up and it's a freezing cold morning in Gush and you have to pull your body out of bed to study something which seems very picayune, it's tsroros, whether you get tsroros to become a muad, or whether you're pater or shusuf shutvim, it's just, say, what am I doing? Why am I dragging myself out of bed? It's free. I mean, if I'd be studying Jewish history and Jewish monarchy and values in Tanakh, that's all important in Baruch Hashem. I'm going to speak about that today at the staff meeting. I'm one of the presenters at the staff meeting. One of our great revolutions is restoring Tanakh study to Am Yisrael, Baruch Hashem. And I want you to absorb. Many of you haven't been exposed to it beforehand. But certainly don't balk. Don't balk at this opportunity because of the level of difficulty. As you saw during Rosh Chodesh, during Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, existentially and intellectually, the level of difficulty is merely a reflection of the level of depth and meaning that's available. Easy experiences yield moderate and lukewarm experiences or lukewarm yields. Challenging experiences, pushing your limits experientially, intellectually, yield greater depth and greater access. And that's probably the lesson you learned during Elul. You push yourself, and you just was speaking yesterday to the Leif HaTorah boys that had a Yom Iyun, so I was invited to speak. And I told them what I told you. I said, if you want to accomplish in this life, you have to be tired. Just get accustomed to being tired and get accustomed to functioning. When you are tired, and of course, I said in a way that creates the type of balance that I hope you guys are continuing to exercise and to implement. Okay, so we'll talk the next day or two. We'll see how much time we'll have about Torah Shebaal Peh, instruction in Torah Shebaal Peh. Terry and Makaros, my apologies for not being available this morning. I needed elsewhere. I'll try to pop in here and there. As I said, cheers tomorrow morning. First thing, so that you can have as much time available to prepare for Shir Klali, Shir Peticha. The first thing you want to talk about is on Daf Tesem Beis, and it concerns, there are a lot of things happening here, it concerns Now, these makaras have one error. It's a big error. Please don't make it. The first gemara, I originally wanted you to see a blot of gemara because I don't want to skip, but you don't have to see a blot of gemara. You can just see the gemara from the Mishnah Tesem Beis, as is indicated, till the Tana Rabbanan on the bottom of Tesem Beis. It's about, I don't know, 20 lines of gemara, but you don't have to go all the way to Yudim and Aleph. I'm going to segment the shiurim, start with the Mishnah Tesem Beis, but don't go to the two dots in Yudim and Aleph, just go until the Tana Rabbanan. Chomer B'shor Mibadam, Chomer B'adam Mibishor, where the Gemara contrasts and compares different mazikim for their stringencies and their leniences, that we'll deal with on a separate occasion. Okay? Here are the Makara sheets, guys. Okay? Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to the sheet. Good to see all your mug shots. Missed you.
Thank you.
You're welcome, guys.